The following podcast is a production of Institutional Real Estate Incorporated. Before beginning our program, we would like to invite you to sign up for a free trial subscription to one of our publications at irei.com. Whether you are interested in real estate, infrastructure, or real assets in general, IREI has a publication to suit your needs. Select Publications on the main menu to choose a publication. Interested in more than one? Sign up for them all.
This is Mike Consul, editor of Real Assets Advisor. Welcome to the program. My guest is Ron Carson, founder and CEO of the Carson Group, which serves financial advisors and investors through its three businesses, Peak Advisor Alliance, Carson Institutional Alliance, and Carson Wealth. All three organizations are headquartered in Omaha, Nebraska. He is also a member of the Real Assets Advisor Editorial Board, a group that serves as advisors to the work that we do and helps us set the direction of the publication with their expert input. Now, we asked Ron Carson to be on the program because there have been some changes afoot at the Carson Group, and he's agreed to elaborate on them for us. Ron Carson, welcome to the program.
Mike, hey, thank you for having me.
Let's start with an explanation about some of the strategic moves that are going on right now. You've made, I believe there's been some changes of strategic partners, the chief among them, that you've moved over to a new broker-dealer platform, Cetera. Why was Cetera that choice? So if you could elaborate on that a little bit, and then any other strategic partners you've taken on, any other changes in strategic partnerships.
Yeah, Mike. Well, first of all, let me just take a step back and give you some context by which we view, you know, any kinds of decisions that we make in changing or adding new partners to the mix. I mean, I'm in my 36th year in this profession. I remember a few years into the profession in the mid-80s, I went to New Orleans and I was listening to a speaker talk about, you know, this massive, there was going to be a handful or several trillions of dollars moving, you know, to the next generation. I remember coming back to Nebraska and I looked all over for that money, and I don't know if it was my value proposition or it just didn't move, but I really never noticed it, sensed it, or experienced it. And now here we are, the number's $41 trillion, and, you know, the movement is happening. I mean, we are, you know, not even in the first inning. We're in the warm-up with a baseball analogy. You know, everybody's getting stretched out, but money is starting to move. And the next generation, you know, when I grew up from, let's call it from 83 to 2000, it was enough to just sit down, have a cup of coffee with somebody, lunch or dinner, and if they liked you, didn't really matter what your value proposition was too much because they didn't have a lot of information. If they liked you, they did business with you. Today, that's table stakes. Today, they got to like you, but then the next, you know, level and layer of due diligence for where this $41 trillion is moving is, can you provide value beyond a doubt? And so in order to be able to provide that, it's really critical who your partners are. You know, our primary partner today is Fidelity. I mean, Fidelity is, they're huge. They're innovative. You know, they have, for example, FCAT, the Fidelity Center for Applied Technology in Boston. And by the way, Fidelity has created a lot of technology for consumers that they didn't even monetize. They just gave away. They're just a good corporate world citizen, if you will, of doing right, and they share our vision for putting the client's interest first and working backwards. And closely behind Fidelity is our partnership with TD Ameritrade. TD, phenomenal. They're very open architecture. They'll integrate with anybody, including Fidelity, and also share our vision for putting the client's interest first. Then there's eMoney. I've been on their advisory board since inception, since Edmund Walters founded the company. Happens to now be owned by Fidelity, but we had a phenomenal deep relationship with eMoney and, you know, the work that they're doing and also, you know, how we can integrate with all of them. You're going to notice, you know, Fidelity, TD, eMoney, they believe in the law of abundance. They share the vision of putting the client's interest first, always. They believe in the fiduciary standard. And then our own, you know, Eric Clark and his family, Orion Services right here, happens to be in Omaha, phenomenal partner that also share the vision. And then Cetera, you know, Robert Moore was at one time a board member of the Carson Group. He no longer is because he had to remove himself because of the conflict when we started evaluating whether or not Cetera could share that vision, because we happen to believe that being a hybrid really does serve the client's interests best. It's not pure RIA. Why it's a pain in the backside having two regulators. It's, you know, we always say, you know, what's in the client's interest, work backwards. And Cetera shares our vision of all of our other partners is how can they share data, how can they provide for a better client experience, how can they work with us and all of those partners to, you know, offer something that's simple to use, that's fully digital, that delights the consumer at the end, and helping us make the complex simple. That's really what we're trying to solve for, is making the complex simple in a complicated, confusing world that has a lot of noise around what you should do with your wealth.
And for our listeners' sake, Ron, you mentioned Robert Moore, who, correct me if I'm wrong, but CEO of Cetera.
He's the CEO of Cetera, and he was, at his previous broker-dealer, he was at LPL. He was the heir apparent, and he really, you know, he had a vision. He shares our vision for what the future looks like, and you know, I think, well, I don't want to put words in his mouth, but he wasn't able to accomplish what he wanted to at LPL, but I think he's 100% believes he's going to be able to execute his vision at Cetera.
And that, you were with LPL for 27 years. Did your move to Cetera, did that coincide with Robert Moore's move? I mean, you're staying with Robert on this one?
It had zero to do with it. There was no correlation. Now, obviously, we had confidence in Robert. So once he landed there, we evaluated all of our partners out there and all potential partners, and it did help us to at least take a look at what they could offer. And really, what Robert was able to do is create an environment there that really allowed us to execute at the kind of level, and it's brave of him to be able to do that, because I would say he's you know, they're cutting new trails and doing, they're not defending what they know, they're not defending what they're comfortable with, but what every great leader and organization has to do now is they have to get out of their comfort zone and really embrace the unknown. And if it's not broken, break it. Because our world, you know, I started in this profession in 1983 through 2000. This was a soap opera. I mean, you could go to sleep for a decade and wake up and not a whole heck of a lot had changed. And you didn't really run any risk of missing out on anything. And nobody really, frankly, noticed if you didn't reinvest back in the business. Today, that is 100% not true. I mean, the firm that I have today is far superior to the firm I had 3 years ago, and the firm I'll have 2 years from now will be far superior to the value proposition we represent today. And that means you have to have partners that subscribe to this philosophy of breaking out of the wisdom of conventional thinking and protecting what we believe the past is versus embracing the unknown future.
Now, you moved from LPL. I mean, you were there for 27 years. That was a monumental event. You're leaving LPL. So, the reason for the departure was why?
All of our partners that we have today, Mike, share our vision for the future. So, whether it's LPL, Fidelity, TD, Orion, Cetera, like our stock portfolios, we constantly evaluate the positions in them, making sure they do what we think they're going to do, and are they going to be able to perform for the future. All I want to say is every partner that we have today, they're focused on what we're focused on, and that's the law of abundance, putting the client's interest ahead of our own, and we will continuously evaluate all of our existing partners, and if they don't continue to subscribe to that philosophy, they won't be our partners going forward.
Okay, now you have said that Carson Wealth has a new strategy for capturing assets and leveraging technology, and I realize there's overlap, some of your answers overlap with some of the questions I'm asking, but explain that, the new strategy of capturing assets and leveraging technology. How would you capsulize that, Ron?
Well, I mean, first of all, I mean, everything we're doing, we recently just completed about a year ago, what we call the Client Experience Optimizer, or CEO, and it really, I want to come back to the Amazon Prime experience. You know, you're an Amazon Prime user, you go in, it's simple, it anticipates your needs, but it makes it super easy for you to do business with them. I mean, matter of fact, you even enjoy the experience. I mean, I literally, this sounds crazy, but I love ordering stuff off my iPad, and I love the fact that I know it's going to show up, and I love how simple it is, and I love that Amazon gets to know my purchasing preferences and helps me make even easier decisions to buy stuff from them. And that's what really our Client Experience Optimizer is all about. It's about how do we make it simple for the advisor to plug in and use all the technologies out there, whether it's the, you know, the CRM and Salesforce Lightning and the Ignite and the reporting services, how eMoney integrates into that, how our custodians integrate into that. They don't want to go to a bunch of different places. They want a single sign-on portal that they can go in, they can use. It's easy to understand what they have, and it drives their productivity. Having said that, they also want something that's really simple for their clients to use, making the complex simple, to where they can go in and have a great experience without having to hit a bunch of different places or to navigate. And a great example of this, by the way, Mike, is, are you a Marriott user by any chance?
I've stayed at many Marriott hotels, yes.
So Marriott, and I'm a platinum member, so the highest level with Marriott, and they had the worst app and the worst website because you'd have to get on, you'd have to navigate, and you'd have to figure out, okay, where the heck do I even find, you know, my activity and my transactions, and it was an awful experience. And just 2 weeks ago, I went into the app, and my gosh, Marriott did a 180. Here's a simple technology, all the same information, the way it's laid out. I can navigate it. I can hit a couple buttons. I can see reservations coming up, where I've been. They can even tell me how I should allocate my points. Anything I want to know is there. Matter of fact, I go on there almost every day just to take a look at it. It's that great of an experience. And so, you know, all the same information out there, but totally organized in a way that delights the consumer. So we're already working on our CEO 2.0 and CEO 3.0. Means, you know, what are we doing? We have to be bifocal. What are we doing today that's really cool and useful? We call that CUSEful. What's cool and useful today? What's cool and useful that we can integrate with our partners, TD Ameritrade, eMoney, Orion? And then what's our wish list? What are things we think could win out and we can provide these incredible experiences? And so with all of that, this drives the ability, so when someone comes to us, let's call it that next generation, and they start evaluating how they interact with us, what our digital marketing presence looks like, what's the quality of the stuff that we're putting out as far as opinion and things we think are important, we win really high marks. I mean, I can tell you that in the last week we've won significant assets from what would have been previously thought to be unmovable assets from families and, you know, the firms like a Bank of New York and a Goldman Sachs and a Northern Trust, because this next generation wants to dictate, you know, how they have the experience, when they have the experience, and they want to customize the experience the way they want it, not the way we used to dictate to them back in the day, saying, you know, here's how we charge, here's what we do, you know, here's when you're going to meet with us, and here's the products and the services and strategies we offer.
You know, and you mentioned Marriott and its responsiveness, and I want to point out that Bill Marriott blogs for the company. He writes his own blog. It's that sort of thing where it's called On the Move, by the way, if anybody's interested in it. And I know that you do that for your organization as well, Ron. You do some of your own writing, some of your own blogging. In fact, we've picked up a piece or two from you that we've run in the magazine. Speak to that, because you talk about leadership a lot, and here you have an individual, in the case of Bill Marriott, or the way you run your own organization, to where you really seem to be the kind of person that wants to be the spokesman for the company, wants to be out front, doesn't simply hand it off to somebody who, you know, a fresh college graduate who's got an English degree.
Yeah, I think that you bring up a great point. I mean, it's important that you have something to say and that you can articulate it well. Now, I'm not a particularly good writer, Mike. I have lots of great ideas, so every 2 weeks, I have a ghostwriter that I work with out of New York, And, you know, and we, you know, I'll dictate a bunch of stuff to her, and then she cleans it up, and she'll even do a little bit of research for me. So, you know, if you're not a good writer like me, you don't have to do all this on your own, but you do have to create original thinking and content. If you think you're going to separate yourself in a crowded marketplace using canned stuff or someone else writing things for you, and by the way, we have a lot of people here that blog and write. If I look at my executive business coaches, if I look at my head of my research group, we've got to have a dozen people that are creating original and new content every week that we're able to push out of there. And by the way, that's really key. If you're really trying to use social media and you're saying you're not getting the traction, you know, how much of your content is canned, because you won't get much traction, versus original thinking. You can use some, repurpose some stuff, but you know, a good 60-70% of it needs to originate from your firm.
Yeah, exactly. Now, this might be a premature question because you've just made some pretty bold moves here, but what do you see as the next stage of development for Carson Group and its component organizations? You've already laid some of that out, but are you looking even farther down the road, Ron? Do you see kind of a Carson Group 3.0 at this stage? Let's call what you're doing now 2.0. Do you see a 3.0?
Yeah, I mean, our MTP, which is Massive Transformative Purpose, Mike, is to own. Nobody owns a national brand for wealth management, and we want to take a shot at that. I just launched, we had a soft launch of I did radio for a dozen years, and I just, after a 17-year break, I just launched a radio show, which will also be multi-purpose through podcasts and lots of other, you know, social media tidbits. And that was one we've done. I've done four shows now. We've had incredible success from that. We've driven significant leads to our partners, and so that we would love. We're going to be on every city based on the early success. I think we'll be on every city in the United States, and we're creating a movement. We're looking for advisors that want to be consumer advocates. They want to stand up against Wall Street and all the abuses that are out there, and there's plenty of them that want to help do the right thing with good strategies and good products, you know, for the consumer. And so we have 51 partner offices around the country today, and it's really less about a number, but it's more about hitting the MTP, and that's to be the most trusted in financial advice. Sounds simple. No one owns that brand today. I'd argue Vanguard probably owns it in the mutual fund side, which John Bogle is one of my just incredible people, visionaries, what he's done for the profession. Love his book, too, if you haven't read it enough. Fidelity is on the, you know, what a powerful brand. The Johnson family, here's a group that takes, you know, a 10 or a 20-year view on things. It spends, you know, $3.5 billion a year on technology. So we're partners with them, and we would love to have a brand. And I know there's others out there that are trying to establish this brand. We think the disruption and the movement of the $41 trillion is made it possible for someone really to own that consumer advocate brand, and for us to hit our MTP.
So let me foreshadow the next couple of questions I'm going to ask you, Ron. I want to kind of take the business at large and ask you what you see as the greatest strength, generally speaking, among wealth advisory firms. And then secondly, what do you see as the industry's Achilles heel? So let's start with the greatest strength. When you look at the wealth advisory industry, what do you see as its prime strength right now?
That's a tough one. I mean, when I look at the wealth management, well, first of all, the relationships that we have with our clients is key, and the fact that the best wealth management firms out there have figured out the secret sauce isn't in pretending you're the next Warren Buffett. It's all about providing, influencing investor behavior, because we all know that's where people are either successful or not successful. You've seen all the Dalbar studies. People rarely even experience the returns of what they own because they never own them at the right time. So The strength is that the best wealth management firms have made a significant commitment to not just financial planning, but to wealth planning, where they have adequate, you know, tax and tax planning and attorneys and CFPs and CFAs, people that come together and operate in harmony to provide an incredible experience. And they've adopted this theory that they don't have to be a library, but a librarian, where wealth management firms have deep resources, and they figured out how to have all those resources work in harmony together.
I suspect that you have a very strong opinion about the industry's Achilles heel. What would you identify, Ron?
It's, you know, and I come across this as Chicken Little a little bit, but I think there's a couple big ones out there. One, and this is not an alternate fact, as Trump would say, this is a fact, is that we are in a crisis mode for not enough people in our profession. You know, the last number I saw is 302,000, you know, financial advisors. You know, there were roughly 500,000 in the mid-90s. You know, we have a lot more money and a lot more people to serve than we had then. Only 5% of those are under the age of 30. The average age of the independent financial advisor that owns a firm is pushing 60. 7% of those have a succession plan, and most of those 7 isn't even really executable. It still revolves around them. So there's not going to be an orderly shift of those clients to the next generation of people truly helping them. And the second is there's still too many advisors out there that define their relationship based on the performance, based on they're the secret sauce. I mean, get over that. Become agnostic. Give your clients many ways to win. Embrace alternatives that are responsible. Embrace passive. Embrace active. And really use them as pieces of the puzzle. Don't be in the all active camp or the all passive camp or the all alt or non-alt camp. Make sure that the strategies perform as advertised, because that's where we influence behavior, and that's where we help clients hit their goals and objectives. And I think that there's a lot of unintentional financial assassins out there. They don't know what they don't know. And by the mere fact that they're trying to keep up on, you know, managing portfolios and all of this research, they're not able to do anything else, and they're sure not adding value to the client relationship. I just recently had a firm that we're talking about joining us. They're on the West Coast, about $600 million in assets, and they, you know, and they're hopping on this back-tested signal strategy. It reminds me of the F-squared, you know, thing. And it's like, hey, this is a thing, man. This thing's always worked. And I say, you know what? I've been in this profession 36 years. I've seen that like 40 times. And it's you've got to be in the game. Make sure the assets perform as advertised, or a building block, or a piece of the puzzle. But really commit to planning and understand where you can add value and where you can't add value.
Why aren't more young people attracted to the profession? What do you have any speculation on that, Ron?
I do. I mean, just look at what's happened. And so, you know, from 2000 on, we really had a problem. I mean, first of all, the markets have not been friendly. You got to witness the dot-com meltdown. Then you had the financial crisis, and you had, you know, all the corruption on, you know, the trading of the Wall Street and the investment bankers. All the young people knew somebody that lost their job, lost their house. You know, watch your 401k get cut in half. And the media just painted our profession as everybody was villains in it. And there were some really good financial advisors out there, but there was a lot of abuse that took place, and there's still some of it that takes place today. So I think they looked at it and go, you know, that used to be a cool place to be, but it's just not cool anymore. And we're, you know, here at the Carson Group, we've put a ton of effort into growing our own, bringing the next generation of people, understanding the service models, totally shifting, you know, the rainmakers like me that grew up just, right, you know, meeting people and networking. You know, my skill set is quickly becoming irrelevant. It's really going to be based on the value proposition that I now give me. My rainmaking ability with a great value proposition, that's great. But the next generation isn't going to have to be, you know, all about sales. It's going to be all about service to the client. and really following a fiduciary standard of putting the client's interest ahead of the firm's and ahead of theirs as an individual.
You know, it's interesting you say that about the crash and people souring on Wall Street, but it seems that investment banks, which may be the most culpable of any organization, it doesn't seem that they have any trouble attracting young people who are looking to earn hundreds of millions of dollars a year, or hedge funds and whatnot. I mean, is that the case? I mean, do you see the same thing
know.
That I'm seeing? That
you know, that's the case today? I mean, look at the underperformance of hedge funds. I think that whole ship is sailed. I mean, you're going to see tremendous pressure on. Gone are the days of, you know, these exorbitant, you know, internal management fees and carry and all of that stuff. The next generation is just too dang smart, and they're not going to fall for something that happened to be hot for a period of time and then it gets cold again. I mean, I think that the change that's about to take place is under. Appreciated by most in financial services, and I think that the way things were done in the past aren't even close to the way they're going to be done and require to be done in the future. And this regulatory change, I mean, you can argue whether DOL is going to be delayed or whether it's not going to be delayed. You got the CFPB. I was just on the Fiduciary Institute literally before we talked about this. I mean, just the awareness the Fiduciary Institute is bringing, you know, to the consumer and the way that they're attacking it. And there's a lot of other regulation, you know, the SEC, you know, you've got the Treasury at the Patriot Act that's going to be here. And it's just good, best business to just adopt a fiduciary standard and work backwards. And you're going to find a lot of these hedge funds and the opaqueness of which they operate aren't just not going to survive, at least under the regulatory spotlight like they could in the past.
That is actually the last question I wanted to get to, which is that I noticed you recently joined the Institute for Fiduciary Standard, and you are on the board of directors, I believe, Ron. What do you hope the organization can accomplish?
And that's what our call was about today. I mean, first of all, there's really, you know, several approaches. One, how do we educate the consumer and give them, you know, four or five questions to ask an advisor that they're either existing advisor or someone they're considering to work for. How do we influence? I think there's a lot of great advisors out there that want to adopt best practices. They're just not sure what they should be, and so we want to educate them. And then we also want to expose all the conflicts that are at the top. You know, they start off with, you know, undisclosed fees, costs, you know, conflicts of interest, you know, from the top. And really push regulators, you know, to have, you know, we don't want to have a lot of conflicting regulation. We don't have clear, easy to understand regulation that not only people can follow, but the consumer can be served at a higher level. That's what I hope happens. I've already, and I think it will, but I've already seen just a shift in the mood of the consumer and the quality of the questions that we get asked today by people coming through the doors of the Carson Group are far superior to the questions we were being asked even 2 years ago. And so, you know, regardless of what the regulation, the next generation of consumer is going to ask questions that they feel only allows them to work with an advisor that's focused on their needs, goals, and objectives.
My guest has been Ron Carson. He, way back in 1983, founded and has been CEO of the Carson Group. Since then, three different organizations under that umbrella, Peak Advisor Alliance, Carson Institutional Alliance, and Carson Wealth. And again, all three are headquartered in Omaha, Nebraska. Ron Carson, thanks a million for taking the time to go through this with us.
Hey, thanks a lot, Mike. I really enjoyed it.